This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3227 for Tuesday the 15th of December 2020. Today's show is entitled, Freshwater Aquarium Basics. It is hosted by Enigma, and is about 26 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Enigma discusses the high-level basics of getting into the aquarium hobby.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Welcome to another episode of HBR. I'm your host, Enigma, and today we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. We're going to be talking about freshwater aquarium basics and how I got into the hobby and kind of a high level of what you should be concerned about getting your first aquarium. And we're going to be talking through some challenges I've had from an aquarium keeper perspective. So I got into the hobby. My dad was really into larger fish tanks, and he got me my first tank when I was 12 or 13. I had a smaller tank. At first I got a 10 gallon or about a 38 liter tank, and then I got larger tanks as I got older. But basically my teenage years, we had a fish tank, and I was super into some of the larger fish. And fish that were a little bit more aggressive in nature. And we'll talk about pitfalls there and kind of my perspective on that maybe in another show. Anyway, so as I became an adult and when I bought my house about 5 years ago, I wanted a larger tank, larger display tank in my dining room. And I ultimately chose a 55 gallon or about a 208 liter tank that was going to be my display tank, and I wanted to replicate what I did as a child and kind of get some of more of my aggressive fish. And again, I'll tell another story about that whole experience and choosing the wrong thing maybe in another show. But anyway, so the first thing that you need to decide, and some things that I didn't do very well when I first got into the hobby, were picking the fish before I picked the tank. Meaning, you should choose what you're going to store in the tank, and then kind of determine everything else based on that. Because people get into a habit of buying too small of a tank for the fish that they're going to store. So you end up with a scenario of either the fish just dies because it's not cared for well because it's too big, or you get a scenario of having one fish in the tank because it eats everything else because, you know, it's very territorial and blah, blah, blah. So size and the type of fish are very important when deciding, you know, what you want to do and kind of your budget on everything else that comes after that. The next thing you should probably decide is what kind of substrate or what's going to be on the bottom of your tank. So there are options such as gravel, sand, there's clay, there's even some people have dirt bottoms where it's literally like potting soil. Those type of things you normally would put on the bottom of your tank. And there's pluses and minuses to each of those things. If I was going to recommend something for a new person that was getting into the hobby, probably would go gravel unless their choice of fish dictated differently. Again, do your research on your fish, see what it will handle or what it will like the best. Most of your starter fish really don't care too much. So a gravel tank is perfectly fine. Next thing you should really worry about is your filtration. So you have some options here, whether it's a hang on the back or hob filter. Hob is short for hang on the back. A canister or a sponge filter. And there's some other options that are more advanced, but we'll say those are your three main options. Hang on the back is primarily what most of the aquarium kits give you. They're the cheapest option. And for most part, those work the best. Most of my tanks, I think all of my tanks right now, have hang on the back filtration. I have a couple of canisters that I'm going to install, and that's one of the projects I'm going to be working on when I'm on vacation next week. And I might do a video of that and or even an audio podcast for HBR to kind of talk through how that works. Might be an interesting thing. But anyway, so hang on the back is probably going to be your choice. And again, unless you're looking to a specific use case or looking to do a little bit different. So your canister filters are, you have more control over what type of media you use to filtrate. Basically, how the canister works is the water comes out of the tank, goes into this little container, which is called the canister, and then filters back into your tank through, you know, it's a pump mechanism. It gives you the ability to, A, it looks better because you can hide most of the intake and outtake, but it also gives you the ability to control what type of media that's filtering your water. And they have lots and oodles of different options there. But again, that requires a lot more research, kind of your specific use case. And it potentially could be drilling your tank, depending on if you want to hide the intake and the outtake. So if you're going to go that route, make sure you do your research. A sponge filter is basically just essentially a sponge with an airline attached to it. Now, this is good for if you're breeding fish or you have some fish that are really small that might get sucked up into either a canister or hang on the back. Sometimes people do this with like freshwater shrimp or other smaller creatures. The problem with a sponge filter is you don't get the filtration that you get with the other options. Basically, all of the bacteria and all of the stuff gets attached to the sponge, but it's still within the tank. With the hang on the back option and the canister filter, the fish waste and other things, other particles get actually pulled out and into a filter medium, a cartridge. Or in the case of a canister, it's completely removed from the tank in the actual canister itself. So with sponge filters, water chemistry does become a bit of a problem depending on how dirty your tank is and some of the other ammonia level, pH level, things like that might be affected if you go strictly sponge. And you would just keep an eye on it. There's test kits and things you can do with that. The next two things that you should probably consider are heaters and lighting. And I talk about these because I feel as a new hobbyist, they're less important than some of the other things that you'll run across. So heaters, again, depending on your use case of fish, certain fish like hotter water than other fish. Other things you could technically not use a filter at all. In my tanks at home, I think I have 11 or so, and most of them are small on the smaller end. They're what we call nano aquariums. They're less than 38 liters or 10 gallons. And I'm growing I'm breeding like shrimp and some of live bears, like guppies, mollies, and such. I don't have any heaters on them. I live in Florida, so the water does not get chilly enough where it really affects my fish at all. so I'm not really worried about a heater. I do have one tank, and I have a couple of blood parrots that just like the heater. So I put in a heater, and they're happy. So again, your mileage may vary depending on what type of fish you keep. So on the lighting side, again, this is more of an aesthetic pleasing item unless you're doing live plants. Most of my tanks have live plants in them. I could go into a whole rant and episode on live plants alone. It's definitely a science and a water chemistry type conversation when you're talking about plants, because you're talking about nitrates and them having the right fertilizer and how what type of plant it is and all of those things you need to consider. If you're starting out in the hobby, I wouldn't recommend live plants or get something that's pretty robust, because you're going to go through live plants pretty quickly just doing trial and error. The benefits of having live plants, though, is it's a natural filter for your water, so you don't necessarily have to worry about a nitrate spike. And nitrates basically are due to fish waste, and there's nitrates and nitrites, and both at extreme levels are harmful for the aquarium life. My tanks, the reason my tanks all have live plants is because, again, natural filter takes care of it. However, I've went through a significant number of live plants, because if you don't have enough nitrates in your water and you don't have enough lighting, what happens is the plants die. And if you have plants dying on you, then you're automatically going to get those nitrate spikes, because decaying matter as a whole messes up water chemistry. So, you know, again, as I'm going to put a big disclaimer on this, do your research. With my lighting, I usually get fairly inexpensive lighting. You can go to the extreme. There are things out there where you can lighting options where they're Bluetooth enabled, Wi-Fi enabled, where you can control them all from your smartphone, you know, an app like that. I may get into that and may try some options with some of my tanks with a project that I've been trying to get on board. It's basically controlling your entire aquarium from a Raspberry Pi. I may do that in the future. At this point, for this particular episode, I'd say go with the lighting option that visually appeals to you. Normally with the kits that you'll buy, the aquarium kits, like the 10-gallon options and even the larger tanks, they're going to end up giving you an LED light that isn't really visually appealing. So more than likely, if you buy a kit, you're going to be replacing that lighting eventually. I say that, but I have two tanks in my house that have the original aquarium lighting that I have not replaced yet. So again, I would say do what makes you happy there and pick the light that works for you. So when you have your tank and you have it all set up, you know, you also want to put this tank in a place that's not around a window. You're going to find if you put it in an area that has a lot of natural light, you're going to have trouble with algae, trouble with getting your tank balanced. You set it up in a good place. You get it on the stand. You make sure your stand can hold the weight. There's places, you know, on the internet that you can look up the weight restrictions. There's kits out there that come with stands. I have a hardware store, basically rack for my tanks in my office. They hold about 1,000 pounds per shelf, and I've got probably 5 tanks on that. But I did my homework, and I made sure that each shelf had the appropriate strength to hold not only the tank, but the substrate and the water that's within the tank. And there's calculators out there on the internet that you can do for that. So make sure your tank is strong, or your stand is strong enough for the tank, and it's not going to like fall through or bow or whatever. Don't put it on a TV stand. You're more than likely going to it's going to fall through. Don't put it on, you know, some rinky-dink stand that can hold 50 pounds, because I can guarantee you, unless it's a 2-gallon aquarium or a very small aquarium, it's probably not going to hold the weight. So make sure you do that. You're gonna put your substrate in. Recommendations here is always wash your substrate unless it specifically tells you to not. So if you're gonna buy like your gravel, for example, you want to put that in a bucket and rinse it really well with water before you put it into the aquarium. What will happen if you don't do that is your tank will be very cloudy straight out the gate. And I particularly would rather that dirt and that debris that comes on the gravel to be out of my tank rather than in my tank. It just delays the process. It's not saying everything's going to die when you're, you know, if you don't do that, but best practice, wash your gravel. So you can get that set up, put in your heater, put, if applicable, put on your light, and then you're gonna let that tank cycle. Well, put your filtration in. You're gonna let that tank cycle for probably a week to 2 weeks. And just let the filter run, let the, you know, turn your light on and off. Just give it a good cycle before you put any fish in it. You're also gonna put in a dechlorinator. Most of the places in the US, you have chlorine naturally in your water. And there's a couple of good products out there. I recommend Prime. Again, I'm not sure overseas, outside of the U.S., if that is a brand that you would use. But in the U.S., I pick up a bottle of Prime. It's for a decent-sized bottle, it's about $14. And that's going to be your dechlorinator. And anytime you do a water change, you put water in your tank, you're going to want to put a whatever dose of Prime that it recommends, and it's usually per gallon or per liter, into the tank to essentially take the chlorine out of the water. And this is to protect the fish, make sure that you don't have things going into your tank that would be damaging to your tank. So then, after a couple of weeks that it's set up and cycling and whatever, you're going to go pick out your fish. And hopefully by this time you've done your research and really determined what type of fish you want to get, and you don't go in and pick out the cutest fish or the one that, you know, speaks to you in the store. Do your homework. Make sure you know what you're going in for. Don't just go off the cuff. Couple of recommendations here. If you're just starting out, try the live bearer route, guppies, mollies, things like that would be a good choice. They're pretty hardy. They're pretty stable. It's not going to be a huge dollar number if they perish, or, you know, you have some issues right out the gate. But I would go something pretty inexpensive at first, because you're going to make mistakes going into this. So once you've picked out your fish, you get them home, you either go one of two routes. You're going to either drip acclimate them, or you're going to essentially float the bag on the top of the tank. Most places recommend a drip acclimation route, where you're basically dripping a little bit of the water into a container with the new animal in it to kind of get the chemistry right. Floating the bag means literally floating the bag that they came in on in the tank to get the temperature right. And the idea of both methods is to make sure that the fish aren't shocked going right into the tank. in this method, I almost always recommend drip acclimation. For hardier fish, it's probably not going to make much of a difference, but get in good habits. There's places on the internet that you can get the little valve for the drip acclimation. I might leave a note in the show notes for this particular process, and I'm going to also put in a couple of kits that aren't bad for starters in the show notes. So once you've gotten the fish into the tank and it's all happy and you get what you're looking for, now how do you maintain it? So a couple of things here, and we've gotten a little longer than I wanted, so we'll leave it at this, is your tank maintenance is a number one priority for you. So if you get into the hobby and you get your tank set up, most people fail when they're not doing their tank maintenance. And there's lots of chatter on the internet on what tank maintenance looks like. I feel it's a tank by tank basis, meaning one tank you may go a year and not have to do anything to it. Other tanks you have to touch every week. And typically your larger tanks, so if you get up into that 208 liter range or even bigger, because there's bigger tanks than that, you have to do less to them. And it makes sense, because if you have more water, the water chemistry is more stable. It takes a lot more fish waste and food to damage the water chemistry. So usually the bigger the tank, the less maintenance. However, when you do maintenance, it's more work. So I don't know if there's a balance. Smaller tanks, if you get under that size, that 38 liter range, 10 gallon range, you're going to be doing maintenance pretty consistently because you have less water to deal with. Thus, the water chemistry can be go wonky on you in a hurry. Pick up a good test kit. I'm going to leave a test kit in the notes. There's a master kit. It's like $30 US. Not real expensive, and you get a lot of use out of it. Check your water regularly. Also, do your research on what type of food your fish like. Typically, you can get away with most live bearers and other common fish. You can get away with flake food. That's not necessarily saying that flake food is the best for the fish, but it won't, damage your fish too much. Now, if you get more exotic fish, you're going to have to get different types of food, whether that be live food, whether that be frozen food, those type of things. And I may do if folks are interested, I may do a show just about the different types of fish food and kind of the pluses and minuses on tank maintenance, because certain fish food are dirtier or can do more damage to water chemistry than other types of food. And then other types of fish food have other downsides. So it depends, mileage may vary. But get the type of fish food that works for your fish, and make sure you know just about what, how often you should feed your fish. Most people, when they get into the hobby, they're going to overfeed the tank, and that's going to damage water chemistry and make you do more maintenance to the tank. So know kind of your fish's habits, and kind of what type of feeding regimen you want to put in place. And the biggest thing on tank maintenance is water changes. And most people debate on whether you should do a water change or not. And what I mean by a water change is literally taking water out of your tank, potentially vacuuming the bottom of your tank, getting all of the fish waste out of there and all the debris out of there, and then putting new water back in. My recommendation is that you should, tank maintenance is the best way to correct problems that you have in your tank. And if I notice that I've gotten, some algae on the tank, or I've got some things growing in the tank that I didn't really account for, I'm going to do a water change in my tank. And that doesn't mean take out all the water, because again, you've got to worry about the actual fish balance and them being used to the water chemistry that's in the current tank. You want to make sure that your fish is happy, that you take out enough water to make a difference. And this is usually less than 50% of your water change. You can get extreme with it and take out more and usually be okay. But I recommend usually anywhere between 25 and 30% at a standard interval, whether that be weekly, whether that be bi-weekly, whether that be monthly, you know, and I've had tanks that I haven't touched in 6 months. Typically, what I try to do on the majority of my tanks is a bi-weekly schedule where I'm taking out about 25% of the water and replacing it with new. And I'm also doing vacuums on the bottom of the tank, and I'll leave a vacuum that I use in the show notes. It's called a Python, not the programming language, but it's really good, and you can hook it up to your water spigot or your water your sink, and you can push water into the tank and also siphoned water out of the tank all in one shot. So it's really nice. Most people in the hobby use it, and it works out for us pretty well. And on that note, I think I've talked at a high level about all the topics I wanted today, so I'm going to leave it with that. If you guys have questions, you can come see me in IRC on hashtag OggCastPlanet on Freenode. Or I've got a new channel called hashtag HackerExchange, and I have a show that I'm going to be releasing that explains the HackerExchange concept. Or you can email me at eth0enigma@gmail.com. Have a great day, guys, and I'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.